Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
You are on a collision course.
We are live Saturday, July 20th. This is Collision Course. I'm John Cino, joined always by Kate from Montreal, along with Lulu. Hello Lulu there. Knows we're free today, so Lulu is getting that camera time.
Yep, she wants to speak to her people. So it's right. She has already one of the reasons we're actually a few seconds late going on here, aside from was this our very first Collision overrun?
I think so. I was trying to think. I'm like, they never really go beyond the 10 o'clock hours. So yeah, it might be the first time. So
on top of everything, she just decided to walk all over my keyboard and screw up my notes. So just be prepared for the fact that at some point I'm going to be like a deer in the headlights here. Yes. Yeah, you're lucky. You're cute.
But yes, if anybody's joining us, watching us for the first time here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel, we are free. And the reason for that is because A1 John Pollock will be on the cafe tomorrow morning talking about TNA Slammiversary, which is just wrapping up now. I think it's on its second to last match with the Mustafa Ali speedball match and then the final main event. So yeah, so we're free here. So welcome everybody if it's the first time hearing us. And make sure you check that out tomorrow with John Pollock, as well as the G1 coverage starts tomorrow with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. And you'll be doing some G1 coverage as well.
I am. I'm doing a bunch. I'll be on for the first time next weekend. It's actually going to be a sort of a large weekend of Cade content because I will, of course, we'll be on next week doing Collision Course and I guess Battle of the Belts. So we'll be on an hour later than usual next week. And then the following day, I am doing 2 days worth of, like, we're covering two shows worth of G1 action, me and Karen Peterson. It's the first time Karen and I have done a show together, which is awesome. Pretty cool.
Karen and Kay, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing you two talk about that. I know only one show has happened so far in the G1. The only thing I was able to catch was the Takeshita Yoda-Suji match because I was just interested to see how Takeshita was going to be in New Japan. But that's a match that you checked out as well?
Yeah. Well, I actually watched the whole thing, but if you're gonna watch one match from this show, it is absolutely Takeshita versus Suji. I think that it very much It was very much in line with what I think a lot of people expected and hoped for. Clearly, it's the opening night of the tournament. It's not really a case where you want to have one of the most spectacular matches. And so it kind of struck me as weird, but it's an excellent sort of opener, like to make it feel exciting with two guys who are still pretty new to New Japan audiences. And I think one who is certainly among the favorites to win the G1 this year. And I thought that they absolutely lived up to it. They gave Naito and Shingo Takagi a hell of an act to follow because, of course, they were the second from the top on the card. Other than that, not a bad intro to the G1, I think. Obviously, I will save a lot of my comments for that next week, but they're in a kind of an odd position this year where it feels like they have to sort of reset and do something different. And I think that first show set them on the road to doing that.
But we are here tonight to talk about the first of many shows from Arlington, Texas, at the Esports Stadium. This is their residency up until the end of August. So not only are they doing Collision here, but they're also taping an episode of Rampage. We're going to get Battle of the Belts next week, as well as Death Before Dishonor, and a couple of TV tapings as well. So they're going to be doing a lot of tapings at this arena. And I'll say off the bat, I liked this venue. I like how it looked. I like how it sounded. Mm-hmm. I like how the crowd, obviously there's only about like 1300 people in there, but the place was packed. The place was full. Definitely a different vibe to it. It gave you like an esports vibe, even like with the way the microphone was mic'd and like the sound came off. It sounded a little bit different than your usual AEW show. And honestly, this is exactly what I was hoping Collision was going to be when it first launched a little over a year ago, looking and feeling different. So honestly, if they decide to stay here or just at least use the same similar set for the time being or for the future permanently, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, what I would say is that it put me in mind of different music venues. Like, you go to see the biggest shows, and they're in like a big, they're in a big arena or stadium. They're it, like, it's a it's an experience about being in a large space. But if you used to, like, most people who are into music know that a lot of the times the coolest experience come in slightly smaller venues where it feels a little more intimate, where you're closer to the action, where you're going to see something that is offbeat. And that's very much the vibe that I got from this. Like, it was definitely, it was like bigger than an NXT or a TNA taping. You could feel that they got more people in there. But I definitely warmed to this. Like, it was striking the difference right off the top, because of course they have to have a whole different set, which I also kind of like. There was a very cool angle that they were able to get with the camera shooting straight up the ramp that just made that, even though the venue was smaller, the setup was smaller, it made that sort of Titantron, I never know what to call it when it's not a WWE thing, but it made that look enormous. And I thought that that was quite effective. I thought they made the most of the space. And if this is the way it's going to go, I think these sort of almost these touring residencies is an idea that they might want to pursue, like do some shows week to week, but look at doing these things from a specific base. I think in particular, I'm looking forward to see how this affects Ring of Honor, because I think that that could be a lot better. And they're doing Ring of Honor specific tapings, I think, while they're there, so where they're going to bulk shoot a bunch. That is something that at least, like, I'm interested in seeing how Collision develops there, but I'm really interested in seeing if it shifts how they do Ring of Honor.
And like you said, and like Dickie Bird says, the hard cam was pointing at the entrance the entire time. And it's definitely like looked good, especially for like the Lumberjack match where you see the Lumberjack mm-hmm. from all the different angles. It definitely was a perfect view to go with. And you had this really long ramp that they had for going to the ring, and as well as like these screens. And I don't think it was an AEW thing. It seems like there were really like wavy, jagged like screens that were on the top of the ramp that I think is mm-hmm. probably just for the esports. It seems like an esports type of aesthetic to have, but I think it works perfectly fine with a wrestling show. I know that C's in the chat said that they need to do something with the sound. There was some times where like there was a little bit of reverb or echo, and I'm curious if anybody was in the arena how the sound came off to the actual crowd itself, because I did notice at times there was a little bit of a reverb and echo.
I noticed it even more with the backstage segments. Like, it didn't seem like they'd figured out how to mic properly for that venue. Like, I found some of the backstage stuff very difficult to follow, in particular the Lance Archer promo that they did. So I think maybe they need to strike a balance there. Sound has always been a bit of an Achilles heel for AEW, but yeah, they get that sorted. I'm very interested to see what they could do with the space.
And one other major change that I heard at the top of the show, no more Elton John. No more theme song. They have no more generic, I guess maybe it's a Mikey Ruckus song, but it doesn't sound like an actual like song. But yeah, just first I've heard of them changing, or maybe the rights are done for Elton John, but it looks like Saturday Night is not all right for fighting anymore. I don't know. I kind of like that song.
It seemed okay.
Yeah.
It seemed like there was fighting. Yeah, obviously the Elton John song has like some great impact. It's something that everyone knows. It's something you can easily kind of sing along with when it starts. But I noticed that, like, not only had that changed, but during the ad breaks, when your feed, like, for the feed that doesn't have the ads in, a lot of times they'll just loop music, which has been this, like, it's usually like on Rampage, it's the standard, the hook
this
from
is Rampage,
baby. They've had a specific one that they've used, which was sort of like the background music for Collision. In the at this point, they changed that too, and it was lined up. It was a loop of the music that we heard at the beginning of show tonight, kind of like the like military marching bands, like quick snare drum feel to the overall thing. But yeah, kind of hard to beat the Elton John song, that one.
Yeah, I'm sure the Elton John song wasn't cheap either, so maybe it's just a way to a little money and kind of go.
they've had it for a little over a year. It might be that they have to let that one go.
And what other way to start this Arlington experience with Darby Allin versus the Beast Mortos, the former Black Tour Roos? When this match was announced, I'm like, yeah, this is the perfect way to start this new era of AEW Collision. So right away, the match starts really fast here with Darby leapfrogging Morto, sending him right to the outside where he hits him with a tope suicida. But Mortos catches Darby and sends him right into the steel steps before tossing him back inside. And then Mortos does this like wild look and pop of Samoan drop where he just like flings Darby into the air before dropping him back. Like only Darby can make this look like devastating and also beautiful at the same time. Mortos then sends Darby crashing into the corner with a cannonball, but he's able to dodge Mortos running into the corner as he spills to the outside where Darby hits him with a coffin drop. Mortos comes right back with a tornado. He should have been in that new Twisters movie with this, the way he had a rotation with this move here. But back inside the ring, they start trading strikes until Allen hits a code red for a two. And then Tony Schiavone keeps talking about how hard it must be for Mortos to wrestle under a mask. I think he's doing pretty fine here, honestly, with some of the moves that he's pulling off.
Doesn't seem to hinder him at all.
They both head to the top rope where Mortos hits a crazy press slam before eventually going for the pin, but Darby kicks out. Darby takes control and hits another coffin drop to get the pin and the win at 10 minutes and 39 seconds. Amazing start to this show. Amazing. You couldn't ask for two better competitors here, but a great, great match here to start the Collision.
Yeah, just killed it. One thing, actually, when we were talking about the setup, and I just noticed this in my notes, and where was the commentary table?
I didn't see the commentary at all, actually. It's funny. I was thinking the same thing. Like, they weren't on the ramp. They weren't on the ringside. Were they in the back, I guess?
I think they were. I think they were in Gorilla, and that felt weird to me. And at some point later, they seemed to kind of acknowledge, like when Tony was talking about being in the ring and talking, that they weren't visible to everyone. Might switch that. That felt weird to me, but the small complaint. And yeah, I loved this match. I think it accomplished a number of things. One was that you got to see that, yes, Darby Allin is well and truly back. I think he had sustained some injuries. Nice gnarly scar there, Darby, from the I guess that was from the, yeah, he said the ladder match with the, which was Sting's last match, where he ended up going to the hospital. And I think the feeling was like it was a little unsure whether he really was fully healed. Yep, he's fully healed. And I thought it was an exciting way to start not a new show, obviously, but a sort of a new take on the show. And of course, it established Mortos, who has stepped up every single time that he's been called upon and delivered a really good performance. I'm kind of torn. I really liked this one. I think I'd probably, in terms of his TV matches, give the edge to the one with Rey Fénix a couple months ago. But this looked terrific. He is a perfect big man for Darby Allin to work with. His offense looked terrific. People were getting really into it, even though they were still cheering Darby. And it accomplished a goal of making me want to see more Mortos. More Mortos.
More Mortos. AEW Women's Division blog with the I didn't see no commentary table. You know what's funny? When Schiavone did enter the ring later on, he was wearing a t-shirt, which is not his usual, like, what he wears when he's announcing. So it makes perfect sense if they were in the back the entire time. They probably didn't realize it until they actually, like, set everything up. Like, wait a minute, we don't have anywhere to put this commentary table, and maybe they just did it from the back.
This struck me as maybe an electrical thing. Like, where can we run the cables? Like, oh, hey, this is, because it's not something that they do on purpose. So maybe they'll have, you know, they have a week to figure it out now.
Yep.
I would be concerned. You don't want to have that happen during the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, though. That'd be weird.
That is true. After the match, though, Darby gets on the mic and says that people have told him to slow down or he won't be able to walk at the age of 30. But now he's 30 and he feels great. He talks about not wanting to go back to being a dishwasher and how he's going to have his first ever blood and guts match. But he said in Sting's final match, everybody saw his guts as he shows a scar that he got from that match. Darby talks about how the Young Bucks and how they never appear on Collision. They never advertise the show, but he does, as this is his baby. He thanks them, though, because without the Young Bucks, he wouldn't be here in AEW, but now they suck. He moves on to Jack Perry and how he will stop nothing to get that TNT title back, and he puts out a challenge to Jack Perry for All In. So we didn't hear back from Perry. We didn't get any official word from this, but it looks like the direction is Perry versus Allen, which I think is the right direction to go to for London. But do you see Perry, when this match does happen, do you see this being Darby taking the title? Because I feel like Perry just got this title. I can't see him dropping it so soon.
I think that this would be a huge win to give Perry, who they've built really well since his return. I think that they've used him very effectively. There is no reason to take that belt off him this quickly. And beating Darby, again, like, I don't think there's anyone else in this company who can take losses and still look as important as Darby does. So Darby's not hurt by this loss, no matter how big the stage. So, yeah, I think that this is the right direction for them to go with the title. But no, I don't think that Darby needs to win the belt. Not at all.
Yeah, I'm really like curious on how this whole presentation of Perry is going to be for All In, because obviously everybody remembers what happened last year at Wembley. So I feel like they're going to have some special entrance or some special presentation for Perry going into All In. So I'm really looking forward to that match. I think it's the right match to do between these two. We go to the back where we have the Acclaimed, and they start to do like their whole like joking presentation. But right away, Billy Gunn cuts them off and says to quit doing that stuff. They have to get more serious as they're going to be in Blood and Guts, and they have to take it to the Elite. And now it's time to nut up or shut up. So Billy Gunn is not having any of this shit, and he wants Max Caster and Anthony Bowens to get their shit together, which I think is the right attitude to have going into Blood and Guts. You can't be spitting a freestyle while you're about to, you know, violence and blood everywhere, I guess.
I thought it was a subtle acknowledgement of the criticism that was made of including the Acclaimed in this match, which is that they don't seem like a serious enough act. They don't have the gravitas to be included in this, especially since I think that the sort of team AEW, and that name is confusing in its own right, but that team, they just don't seem to be as well thought through as the Elite, who seem like this perfect machine, but also where there's like this tension between Hangman and the others. Like the Team Elite are really interesting and they seem like a solid force. The others are just sort of, yeah, what the hell, we'll do this. And in particular, I think the selecting the Acclaimed rather than, say, FTR, or I was watching last night, I'm like, I think I kind of prefer they put the Lucha Brothers in there, who of course have the huge history. They're the ones who took the titles off the Bucks. Why would they not be included in that group? So they did need to do something. I'm almost sure that there's probably already a Nut Up or Shut Up t-shirt for sale on shopaew.com, which, you know, good luck with that. So we'll see. I'm still not totally sold on the Acclaimed being part of this group, but yeah, I thought that it was good that they sort of leaned into that a little bit. And yeah, we know that people don't think that they belong in this, so they're going to speak to that.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but the Acclaimed, they're owed a tag title shot, right? Did they win a match?
Yes,
okay, but that's not the direction that we're going with, because later on we'll find out another team. So I'm wondering when this match is going to happen, maybe at All Out, because it feels like the All In match is already being set up at this point.
Yeah, I think you almost have a story that you could do there, where the Bucks have defended these titles twice since they won them in like April, I think. So you have this story where it's like they have challengers kind of queuing up and they're just not doing anything with that. We'll see. I have my own thoughts on what we have set up for All In. There's nothing to say. It couldn't be a three-way, but
yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that later.
We go to the next match, but unfortunately, it wasn't much of a match. It was Hikaru Shida versus Sky Blue. As soon as the bell rings, Blue goes after Shida, attacking her in the corner. They take it to the outside, where Shida hits this crossbody, and it looks like she lands on her knees, on Sky Blue's knees, and right away, the medical team goes to check on Blue as we go to picture-in-picture. And when we come back, the match is over. Shida's been declared the winner. I'm not sure if you're able to hear or see more during the commercial break, but yeah, unfortunately, this match ended really quick due to an injury.
It was too bad, because I thought that first minute where we actually had a match looked good. And it was one where Sky Blue threw out the challenge last week, and they seemed to be sort of indicating that she wanted to progress to the next level. Shida, obviously one of the top talents in the women's division. So we went in there where it's like, oh yeah, you got two really tough to call women's matches this week. I'm looking forward to it. Neither one of these was going to be a squash. In theory. Now, during the picture-in-picture, very little happened, but what was noticeable immediately was that the camera wasn't showing Sky at all. And that's,
I noticed that. Yeah, when I had my picture-in-picture, I was trying to see what was going on, and the camera was literally zoomed out, showing the entire arena. So I knew something was wrong.
Yeah. At one point, like, Shida just walked out for part of it. And I think it's a little odd, but I feel like they've sort of been teasing a Shida heel turn for a little bit. And so this worked so perfectly when she walked out. I thought, like, okay, well, wait a minute. Is it a work? But then when they weren't showing her And I checked online and I saw a couple of people, like one actually saying they were close enough to hear the impact. They were like, not good. And apparently Sky, like she needed assistance to get out of the, arena. Tony Khan tweeted afterwards that apparently she has an ankle injury. Very much hope that it's not, it's nothing too serious, because she's someone who really, like, she does not deserve to be derailed. She's worked very hard to get where she is. Interesting thing, though, Tony Khan tweeted that she had an ankle injury earlier today. Tony also tweeted, or AEW tweeted, no, it was Tony Khan personally, I think, that Dalton Castle sustained a back injury last night, Wednesday, at the Rampage tapings when he was fighting Roderick Strong, and that was going to take him out and for the rest of the year. Yeah. Certainly best wishes to him, but is this a new policy? They have never been that quick or that direct about talent being injured. And this is very unfortunately twice in one day that they have announced the nature of an injury, and in one case, how long the timeout was likely to last. So that's very much a shift for me, because AEW notoriously tight-lipped about even saying that someone's injured.
That's absolutely true. Sometimes people just mysteriously disappear and we don't know what happened to them. But yeah, that's I noticed a Dalton Castle thing also. And obviously we wish him a speedy recovery. I did find it funny, though, on Rampage last night where they said for Minoru Suzuki's match, it says New Japan couldn't clear him due to an injury, but he's perfectly fine here in AEW. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Be careful there with Murder Grandpa.
Yes.
But yes, the last update, like you mentioned, was from Tony Khan around 8:30. He said that the match was stopped due to an ankle injury to Sky Blue. Sky Blue is being evaluated now by doctors. We're all wishing her the very best. So if we hear an update, if anybody hears an update, send us a little chat here and we'll go ahead and read it. But hopefully a speedy recovery from Sky. She was just starting this new look, this new, changeover from Sky Blue. And unfortunately, hopefully this injury isn't too bad.
Yeah, this has been a bad couple weeks for AEW with injuries, with Rio getting injured last week and then Dalton Castle and now Sky Blue, like oof, and all just freak, they like just things that I've seen them hit or moves I've seen them take before.
There is an update on Charlotte Renegade. I know we've spoken about her. Supposedly she's was being evaluated this week as well. So hopefully we'll get to see her and her sister tag up soon enough. And I just want to think that because of this match stopping, that Tony Khan was like, hey, Lance Archer, can you just beat up like random people in the back? That's exactly what we got. We go to Lance Archer destroying all these random guys in the back and saying that everybody has forgotten just what he could do. And it's time to remind them all as he continues to just kind of toss stuff around at all these guys. I thought we were going to get a match maybe, but not yet. But of course, you can't have a Texas show without A, Dustin Rhodes, and without B, Lance Archer. So we did get a Lance Archer appearance. So hopefully we can see more of him during this Arlington run.
Somebody... They have the opportunity to do a bit of an arc. It was so funny because I could not really make out anything he was saying, but I didn't really need to. He got his point across.
Exactly.
I understood.
One person who has no issue getting on TV is Chris Jericho. As we go to him, and he says that he's been waiting for 4 years for this match with Minoru Suzuki. He's been thinking about it and wanted it to happen either in the Tokyo Dome or in Dynamite. And now this Wednesday, it comes true. He says it's a dream, a first-time ever match, but for Suzuki, it is a nightmare. He says it'll be far more violent than blood and guts, and if there's anyone that can match him for experience, it's the learning tree, Chris Jericho. So he can't wait to teach him a few valuable lessons, like not turning him down to be his partner or to interrupt his TV time. So yeah, this match that was set up right before Forbidden Door to confuse us all is actually going to happen this Wednesday on Blood and Guts. So yeah, Suzuki and Jericho, are you expecting anything out of this match? Or
I get the feeling that we're probably headed towards Jericho versus Hook at All In for that title. So like Hook winning the FTW title can become sort of an All In tradition. I don't care about that match, and I would love to see Suzuki win because I think that he could do some crazy matches. I think if you're going to talk about FTW, he's the perfect person for it. So I know I'm going to get my heart broke on Wednesday, but I really wish that Grandpa could win the title.
Yeah, we don't really see Suzuki lose a lot, so I'm curious on how – I'm sure he's going to have some shenanigans or some help from the Bad Apple and the Redwood, but I'm sure Jericho is going to squeeze in a victory over Murder Grandpa here. After the break, we see the premier athletes heading to the ring as Tony Nese talks about he thought that everything is bigger in Texas was referring to the cars and the houses. But of course, no, it means the people, because the people here are terribly, terribly fat. He says it's not their fault because they haven't had real athletes to look up to, and starts dissing the Texas Rangers for having an under 500 record. Nice then calls Mark Sterling the greatest lawyer in professional wrestling, and he made up a contract for a lucky individual for an opportunity tonight to face him, and out comes Rey Fénix. Tony Nese versus Rey Fénix, and Nigel keeps asking Shivani if he knows that Nese has won the Jesse the Body Ventura Award, which Shivani highly thinks that is not correct. Nese starts the match going after Fénix with kicks, taking him down with a leg lariat for a two count. Fénix, this scared me because we just saw an injury with Sky Blue.
Yeah.
Fénix tries to like springboard off the ropes here, and he like falls on his ass, and I'm like, oh no, please, like, don't be another injury. Shivani was trying,
especially with Fénix, who spent so much time on DL.
Exactly. I feel like he always gets injured, unfortunately. Shivani tries to his best to cover this up, saying that he thinks that Josh Woods grabbed his foot. Josh Woods did not grab his foot here.
Nope.
They start trading chops back and forth to each other before Fénix sends Nese to the outside, where he tries to dive onto him, but Sterling is able to save Nese. Nese takes him out as Woods and Arya Davari start attacking Fénix as we go to picture in picture. When we return, they're trading pins before Nese picks Fénix up for one and powerbombs him down for a two count. Nese sets up for the running knees, but Fénix stops him with a Hurricanrana for a two. He follows with a thrust kick, but Davari gets on the apron. Fénix sends Nese right to the outside on him as Fénix hits a dive onto all the premier athletes. The crowd is very loud, vocally supporting here for Fénix. He walks on the ropes, but instead of hitting Nese here, he takes out Sterling, who just happened to get on the apron, so good for him for getting that. Nese takes advantage of this and hits a 450 splash, but Fénix is able to kick out at two. Fénix does his walk in the ropes again. This time he's able to kick Nese, followed by a frog splash to get the pin and the win at 11 minutes and 2 seconds. Nice little fun match here. Obviously, a lot of interference. There's a lot of shenanigans, interferences in a lot of these matches, but this one luckily didn't cause the finish. But yeah, good match here between these two.
Yeah, I thought that they did very well, and I suspect that they had to do a couple minutes longer than they were planning, just to make obviously there was some time to be made up because of the way that the Sheeta Sky Blue match got interrupted. So if they had to improv some of this stuff, it was seamless. Kudos to Mark Sterling for eating that kick with his entire face. Holy God, like that just that connected. I thought Fénix looked great here, but a huge reaction, which in general, I feel like this is probably something that he already knows. But Anthony Khan, you are in Texas for a month. You heard the reaction to all of the luchadors who came out tonight. This is a great opportunity to do things differently, to just try out new stuff. It's going to be an odd dynamic, one that we're not used to. And I think that putting a spotlight on the cornucopia of luchador talent that you have at your disposal during this residency would be an excellent idea. And we know that you listen, so mark my words, this would be a good thing, and it will get the crowd on side, because damn, they were really hot for this. I thought Fénix, other than that one little rope botch, looked terrific. And that's the thing, when you have people doing these highly ambitious moves, they're going to mess up more often than people who wrestle very safe style. And I will cut them a little slack for that wherever I see them. But other than that, I thought that this match looked terrific. Nese is he is someone you can always rely on to give you a very a strong performance. And yeah, shenanigans, but they weren't definitive shenanigans. So I'll let that pass.
We got some definitive shenanigans later on in this show, unfortunately. Yeah, with all this interference on the outside, I was expecting Penta to come out, but that's something they could do like an internal like feud just like within the Arlington shows, where like next week Penta will come out and help him, and then maybe lead to a six man and have another luchador come in. But I highly agree with you. Like, this is the time and place to do, you know, bring in as many luchadors as possible. And also, Alex Abrahantes, what exactly do you do? You're not even helping out. All these guys are attacking Fénix on the outside. He was just standing there doing nothing. So one little comment here from AW Women's Division blog. He says, the only thing I can critique about the eSports Stadium is all the fans' seats were floor seats. Could barely see anyone after the first two rows. Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen, I feel like, in a small arena like this. But the crowd was
definitely... I really hope,
it, so.
Yeah. I really hope that they don't have a situation like that one at Dynamite and Rampage a couple of weeks ago with this, like, the giant guy who was standing up and blocking everyone. You saw him, he got removed at one point during the Rampage tapings. But in a setting like this where everyone's on the same level, that could be a huge problem.
Were you speaking about the guy that was wearing the Powerhouse Hobbs shirt?
That was, yes, the large white man with the big black and jacked shirt.
Yes, he was definitely trying to get noticed. And believe me, you were noticed by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back from the break, Tony Schiavone in his nice Collision t-shirt is in the ring, and he introduces FTR. Cash Wheeler gets on the mic first and says that Tommy Billington has a bright future ahead of him, and there is no way they will let Don Callis walk all over him. He continues talking about how they've had the best run of their careers, and it's no secret that he has been going through some stuff personally, and this has been a cloud over his head. And every single time he comes to the ring, that was his escape where he could forget all this other shit. He says that some of this stuff isn't even true, but these people helped him get past all that, and all that matters is wrestling, and every match is going to be like, every match feels like it's his last match because he honestly didn't know if it would be. They move on to start talking about how it's time for some buck hunting before Dax Harwood takes over and talks about all the matches and opponents that they've had, including the cherry on top beating the Bucks at Wembley Stadium last year. He says that he had a serious back injury in April, and that left him uncertain if he would ever come back. And in those 6 weeks when he was rehabbing, he was watching every Dynamite, every Collision, every Rampage, hoping that the Bucks would take this division to the promised land, but he was completely let down, and he didn't even see them defend their titles. So he says that starting next week, the FTR will start the road to the Tag Team Championship, and it will end at Wembley Stadium at All In. He talks about being tough to deal with, but if you give him a little bit of love, he will give everybody back every ounce of tear, sweat, and blood, and they will become your three-time AEW Tag Team Champions. So yeah, obviously the direction is to go for these tag titles, but like you said, they could definitely include the Acclaim to do a three-way, which I think would be the right move to do instead of doing the straight-up rematch from last year.
Yeah, I think we not only have we seen this several times before, we literally saw it at Wembley last year. So I don't think that there is a lot to be gained just from doing this match over again. Like, we know that these teams are good together, but we also need to make room for some new teams. So yeah, I think maybe do like a ladder match for like a three-way with the Acclaimed, or throw in another team there. There's lots of ways that you could go, but this needs to be, like, this is a big show, and this needs to be something more special than the repeat of what we saw last year and what we've seen at a number of other venues. No disrespect intended to anyone. Was surprised a little bit to see Cash bring up the Troubles.
I was going to ask, is that the first time that they've said it on screen, at least, right?
And it's funny because this happened just about exactly a year ago, because when it was dicey in terms of the charges, like, people seemed, it was a little bit up in the air whether or not this could interfere with their ability to travel to the UK last year. And as I said, like, no, just being arrested is not enough to cause travel problems. This was a weird case because the way it was presented, it seemed very open and shut. And then like, the case didn't even go to trial. It was just dropped, which does make me think, like, yeah, there was clearly an incident, but it does make me wonder, like, if he doesn't have a good point about this, the extent of what happened being greatly exaggerated or misunderstood, because for it just to get dropped going into court is exceptionally odd if they had as solid a case as it looked against him.
So it looks like starting next week, they're going to be going through some tag teams so they could obviously go up the rankings, right, Tony Khan? The rankings going up.
Remember those? Yeah. We're bringing those back. Samoa Joe promised.
Yeah. That was like the quickest, like, return for something, and then just they took it away like before anybody even realized they were back. We go backstage where Lexi Nair is with a very angry Sheeta here, who she said she came here to fight and she still wants to fight. And I thought she was gonna like just have another match here, honestly, but no. She calls out Dr. Britt Baker and she says that she wants to welcome her back, but it says to tell her to get in line if she wants to be the TBS champion. She reminds everyone that she was the one that made her bleed by breaking her nose, and she'll do it again this Wednesday at Blood and Guts as the match is made official. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD versus Hikaru Shida. Yeah, this is a match that I'm obviously looking forward to. But yeah, I was really expecting Shida to just like call anybody out and just have a match. Obviously, there was talent there in the Lumberjack match. You could have picked from any
of them. Lots of women. More women than usual. Yeah, I thought, again, Britt has clearly been a huge babyface since she got back. So this almost seemed to further the idea that Sheeta was going a little bit heel more so than she has been. Do not hate that idea at all. She's never had a heel run during her time in AEW. And it would change her up. It would freshen her up. Looking forward to the match. They've had very good matches in the past. This makes me think that it was the plan all along for Sheeta to win, just not under those unfortunate circumstances. She did the best that she could with it, and good. I suspect that this was something they had to improv very quickly, and that there had been another segment taped to get to the match with Baker. So good on them, and yeah, I'll be very curious to see, because we haven't actually seen Britt in the ring as a performer since she got back. So I'll be curious to see, like, when someone comes back, you're always wondering, one, are they ring fit? Are they going to have to shake off a bit of rust? And two, quite often when people come back from an injury that long, they can change up their style. And I'm always curious to see what that happens and how they might have changed. And obviously, I mean, I don't think that Sheeta's going to win this one, but it'll be a good match.
Yeah, I was actually curious myself when the last time she wrestled. It was last September, so it's been 10 months since she's been in the ring. So yeah, hopefully everything is okay with her. Obviously, her health comes first. But
I think, actually, interestingly enough, I believe it was last year at Blood and Guts, which is where you had that unfortunate incident where Britt Baker had a match, but it was only about a minute long, and it was the only women's content on the show. And it was that show where famously someone held up the sign saying "Book the women's division better." I believe that was Blood and Guts last year. So
it was, yeah. I looked it up. Right, yeah. She had a minute and 6 seconds against Kayla Sparks, which she won. Yeah, that's I totally forgot. That was such a quick match. Wow,
really? You forgot the 1 minute match?
We move on to our next match here, Roderick Strong versus Tomohiro Ishii. And right away, we see a sign in the crowd that says exactly what we were all thinking: Neck Strong versus No Neck. The match starts with a chop off here that gets quicker and quicker. The crowd's totally into it here. Ishii corners Strong, who tries to strike him off, but Ishii is not budging at all. And the crowd chants, "You fucked up," as Ishii takes Strong down with one very hard forearm. They go back into exchanging forearms and chops before Ishii sends Strong to the outside with a hard shoulder block. Ishii chases after him, but as he's sending Strong back inside, Strong comes right back with a dropkick and drops Ishii with a uranagi on the apron as we go to picture-in-picture. When we return, we see Ishii catch Strong right into a power slam before they go back into another forearm exchange. Ishii follows with his wild-looking release German suplex as Strong goes crashing right into the corner here. They head to the top rope. I get really scared here, but Ishii hits a superplex to get a two count. They go back and forth dodging each other's moves before Ishii hits a big headbutt, knocking Strong down. Strong comes back with an Olympic slam, followed by a gutbuster to get a two count. Strong tries to go for the end of heartache, but Ishii stops it, and he follows with a pair of lariats, but Strong kicks out yet again. At this point, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett show up. They weren't at ringside. They just randomly show up here. They get on the apron, and this causes the referee to get distracted long enough for Strong to hit a low blow, followed by the jumping knee to get the pin and the win at 12 minutes and 17 seconds. So this is one of the couple instances tonight where there was a little bit of shenanigans to for the finish here. But I feel like with Ishii, they're trying to protect him as much as possible here. And if it means interference for him to lose, then obviously Strong has to win going into his title match next week. But they want to keep Ishii strong by doing a little bit of interference for the finish.
Yeah, thought Tom looked very good here. And in a way, as much as I don't love the shenanigans, I appreciate them protecting him a bit. Once again, that suplex I thought Roddy landed on his neck, which at one point, which would have been both terrible and ironic. But yep, the good match. I was entertained. I am very glad that that Ishii has chosen to do his excursion here in AEW Collision Land.
Yeah, like him and Suzuki not being in the G1, they just get to, you know, have a little bit of vacation here in AEW. But yeah, that top row spot, I thought he was going to hit him with a brain buster. I'm like, please do not get injured. Do not kill somebody here. But yeah, the match was fine. Like, apart from the finish, I think this is obviously the right person went over here. But after the match, the Undisputed Kingdom continued to attack Ishii until Mark Briscoe and Kyle O'Reilly run out to chase them away, as Briscoe and Strong have a world championship match next week on Death Before Dishonor. So yes, 2 days after Mark Briscoe is going to be in this Blood and Guts match, he's going to have to defend his title against Roderick Strong.
they better protect him pretty well. Yeah, like that is, I admire the ambition, but this could go wrong in a hell of a hurry. You are not giving yourself much time to recover. If look, we saw tonight, people get injured all the time from just about anything, and you're putting them in a match where injury is, I would say, more likely. That said, group matches, it is easier to protect people so they can play around with things this way. But as an aside, I really do wish that since they've started this conglomeration group, I just want them to stand together when they come out and just yell conglomerate at one point. Or just something that silly would really suit the vibe of this group, I believe.
And it looks like Ishii is an official member as well, because on Rampage, he was introduced as part of the conglomeration. So, but I feel like if they do want to take the title off of Briscoe and put it on Strong, it's like the obvious is there. He gets banged up on Blood and Guts enough to lose the title. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that happening, honestly. They show highlights of MJF's international title win over Will Ospreay, and they said that we will hear from him on this upcoming Wednesday. What they didn't mention, and I just like randomly saw this online, was that MJF is showing up in CMLL next in
yes.
two weeks, I want to say. I think it's on August 2nd, if I'm not mistaken.
I feel like Anthony saw those comments from AAA about how he would not send his top stars and just decided to prove them wrong in the most obvious way possible. Sending MJF down there, like, you could... There are very few... he's already sent Danielson down there, and now MJF. So... Yep. I think, and Moxley, like, they had a BCC thing. So I would say that, yeah, clearly that partnership goes well, but he will be defending his international title at CMLL. So
this could also come off of like some criticism that WWE has been getting lately about like their relationship with TNA, about how they're not kind of sending back their big stars back to TNA. I'm saying this as if Slammiversary is happening right now, and who knows who probably showed up and proved me wrong right here. But I could definitely see Tony Khan saying, this is how we work with our partners. We're going to send like one of our biggest stars ever to your show. So have they announced who he is wrestling against? I don't think they have, right? For MJF?
I don't think they did, which could mean that they haven't, or could also mean that my memory's going either. It's about 50-50. So.
But I hope this...
No,
like,
I don't think they did.
This international reign for MJF, I hope he wrestles in Japan. I hope he wrestles in Europe and kind of just, you know, because, you know, him always talking trash about Japan. Well, I just want to see him cut a promo in Japan. I think it would be hilarious.
I mean, he's definitely wrestling in Europe, because they have All In coming up. So yeah, but there's a possibility also that he defends that title in Cardiff, I guess the week before. There are other shows going on around All In. He could show up there. I think they had some people show up at an indie show.
Yeah, last year, didn't like Orange Cassidy show up at Rev?
Yes.
I might be thinking of a different weekend, but he definitely showed up at one of those
shows. Orange Cassidy defended his title there. It was like against a bunch of people, including Mustafa Ali.
Yep. So there we go. Now MJF has to go ahead and defend his title all around the world, being the international champion. We go to the long-awaited debut of one Hologram. And Hologram here has his fancy entrance here. He has this neon H logo. And as we said already, he is former Triple A luchador Aramis, who is now signed to AEW under this new gimmick. So first of all, what do you think of this whole look and presentation of Hologram? It definitely gave me like Sin Cara vibes with like the lights and everything. They're definitely trying to give you like a big push on him, but I think it was pretty cool from our first look at him.
Yeah, I thought that it was slick. It looked good. And I think it was smart to just leave it at it looked good. They weren't trying to create some sort of background lore to him. They didn't have this like big story associated with it. It's just like, no, this guy has a cool look and a cool moveset, and we're going to show him to you. So I think that was very to the point, and they didn't need to do more. And I'm actually happy that they didn't.
I was actually more excited to find out who his opponent was, because we see Grimmel Loco.
I saw him in the ring as he was coming out. Like, oh, smart move, choosing someone who he's faced before, like, so that, particularly given, again, they probably had to stretch this out a couple minutes longer than they planned to.
Yeah, I feel like this is more of a showcase for Gringo Loco to hopefully get a deal as well, because he was being used for Ring of Honor for a while. They kind of like stopped with him a little bit, but I feel like he should be
shocked
somebody
to find out that this was his first appearance in AEW this year. And I was sure that he had been, I mean, maybe he has been on Ring of Honor, but it's possible, I guess. But yes, certainly he's another one who seems well-liked by the people there. And I'm a little surprised that he hasn't been signed officially. There may well be reasons for that. But again, you've got this bubble where you're going to be in the same place every week. So guys like this who have put in a good showing before, it's an opportunity to use them multiple times and maybe get them involved in some storylines.
Yeah, he's been used a bunch for Ring of Honor, but the last time they used him was back in February. And as far as AEW, he only appeared on an episode of Rampage, and that was last year when they were in Chicago. So yeah, he hasn't been used much on the All Elite shows, but hopefully he will. Hopefully this is a way for them to be like, hey, he needs to be on TV as well. And like AEW Women's Division said, the base god, the perfect person for a one hologram Absolutely. To face off against. And right away, the base god is in effect because hologram goes right on his shoulders and does some fancy jump off of it before taking Gringo to the outside with a TRS and hitting a dive onto him. Hologram follows with a Hurricanrana, but Gringo is able to stop him and sends him face first into the corner. Gringo stays in control for a little bit, hitting a press slam and a standing moonsault to get a two count. Gringo heads to the top rope and tries a corkscrew drive, but Hologram is able to get out of the way. He uses his speed to dodge Gringo in the corner. It's like very fast, Matrix-like moves. I'm like, my eyes couldn't register with the moves in the speed.
I was thinking of you having to record what was going on as I was watching this. It's like, I think if you just like, stuff happened, that's fine.
I need to have like multiple monitors or multiple camera angles with some of these luchador matches that they see here. But Hologram sends Gringo to the outside where he hits him with a top rope Hurricanrana, but back inside a spin kick from Hologram before putting Gringo onto his shoulders for an airplane spin drop that they call the portal bomb to get the pin and the win at 4:14. So quick match here, but a lot was obviously thrown in with the two luchadors here. The right opponent in Gringo Loco, please come back. Please sign him to do something with Gringo. And a nice first showcase for Hologram here. And no Alex Abrahantes. I'm already happy that he wasn't just every other luchador that's been coming in is like all treated the same. So it's very refreshing to see a luchador treated totally different. And it's an original creation from AEW as well, which we haven't seen as far as luchadors go.
No, I was interested about this. I'm guessing that maybe Artemis just wanted to try something different. And they're like, sure, you're getting introduced here. Like, maybe that's he wanted to shift the persona. I thought starting off with the shoulder spot, which is one that certainly, if you've seen Artemis before, it's something that it's kind of a thing that he does. So starting off with that, I think for Lucha fans, if there was any doubt as to who this was, that settled it. And immediately you get this like lucha chant going, which I would take in support of my point that this is an awesome opportunity to feature that style where you have an extremely receptive audience in Arlington. And yeah, this accomplished everything it needed to, did not outstay its welcome. I thought it was clever because there was one point where Hologram, he was about to do a dive. And I'm not sure if this was planned, but I suspect it wasn't. It almost looked like he thought, I do not have my footing quite right. So he flipped back into the ring, did another move, and then did the dive, which just goes to show, if you are not absolutely certain that you're in the right position to do a very tricky move like that, there is no shame of resetting and trying it again a couple of minutes later. And I thought, like, there's a chance that he meant to do it this way, but it looked to me as if maybe he thought about it and thought like, no, I can do this better. I can make this look better. They did. It looked fine. It was cool. So, yep, already want to see him more.
There's one person that I would love to see a Hologram face. And we only saw him wrestle one time. It was on a random episode of AEW Dark back when they were doing shows at the Universal Studios. A luchador by the name of Infinito. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this Infinito.
I am not. I am not. But please.
For anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, Bryan Danielson decided to randomly dress up like a luchador once and wrestle on AEW Dark. This is during the pandemic day, so obviously everything was just being thrown against the wall. But yeah, he did his dream, I guess, of wrestling as a luchador.
It was right after he joined, too. Like, I don't think it was, like, he had not been there long before he just showed up. And
yeah, unfortunately, Too Fast Too Fuego have been let go. So the next best luchador to face off against Hologram would be an Infinito. So knowing Bryan Danielson, I could definitely see him like bring this gear back up just to have a random match on Collision against Hologram.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So we go to the back. This is the part where I was having issues hearing anything. And the main reason I was having issues is because this entire promo, I kept hearing the cowbell. I'm not sure if it was Dustin like hitting it.
Is that where they had the mic?
I don't know. Like he wasn't like hitting it. Like the cowbell was just randomly going off and it was so confusing. Anyway, It was Dustin Rhodes with Kevin Von Erich along with his sons, Marshall and Ross Von Erich. And Kevin talks about how he learned so much from Dustin's dad and Dusty Rhodes and how there'll never be another one like Dusty. He talks about how his sons could benefit from Dustin's advice. As Dustin says, the storm has arrived and it's one of the greatest legacies of professional wrestling right here. And if they listen to him, they will lead them down a great path. I'm sorry if I missed anything. This cowbell was just like, you know, it was like the more cowbell Christopher Walken. But obviously the story here is putting the Von Erichs pairing up with Dustin Rhodes, which makes sense. They're in Texas the next couple of weeks, showcase some Texas royalty here. And the Von Erichs haven't been signed yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if one day we'll see both Ross and Marshall be All Elite.
Mm-hmm. It would not shock me. Clearly they liked them when they used them before. And again, take advantage of the situation you find yourself in and use talent that's already known and already liked locally. And yeah, I don't like the pairing with Dustin, you know, Team Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. After the break,
less cowbell.
Yes, please. I don't know what was going on here. It's I don't know. I'm gonna like have cowbell sounds in my sleep tonight. After the break, though, something that I did love to hear and I always love to hear is Mark Briscoe in his crazy promos here. He talks about how next week he has a busy week with Death Before Dishonor where he defends against Roderick Strong and says that they came up with the game together, but he's gotten wiser and tougher since the last time they went at it. He then talks about Blood and Guts and says that the Elite is exactly the problem of what's going on in the world today and tells them that he'll be disappointed if they don't bring the fight and it's time to get violent as he just screams into the camera. Give Mark Briscoe Jericho, I know you want TV time, but Mark Briscoe deserves TV time on every show, cutting one of these promos about his word of the day. What was the word of the day on Rampage? I forgot what it was, but it was
I can't remember either. It was great. Yeah, he is someone like just wind him up and let him go. Just someone you immediately warm to. I did think that it was kind of funny, given that his phrasing often makes what he says a little bit difficult to follow. This was the one promo where the sound was crystal clear for me. Oh, yeah. So, thank you for that, because it's one that I might have struggled with otherwise. But I think that he's been great. I think that they recognize, like, they let him talk on Wednesday. They're letting him talk here. They know that they've got a winner on their hands with him. It's going to break my heart if he loses the title next week, although I do think that it's a possibility. But yeah, I found, just as an aside, they seem to be promoting Ring of Honor a lot more than usual tonight. Like they didn't, the odd thing being they didn't talk about Athena or anything, who's really been the stalwart of Ring of Honor, but they talked about the Briscoe and Roderick Strong match a lot, obviously, because they were both featured on the show, but it was interesting because it's almost like they've avoided mentioning Ring of Honor very much, but they mentioned it last night on Rampage, which was even weirder to me because technically they're counter-booking Rampage with Ring of Honor next week. So, yeah, it makes me wonder if there's something going on there, maybe that there's a deal to put Ring of Honor on a streaming service that's part of this, I think, the never-ending deal negotiations, which hopefully will be winding up soon. But yeah, it definitely showed to me that there was a lot of Ring of Honor talk.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that as well. And I feel like it could be because of this whole like Arlington deal with the fact that they're doing a lot of shows there. It could be maybe them like asking for a little bit more promotion just for ticket sales and obviously to get people to watch it. The one thing that was missing from this Mark Briscoe promo was a conglomeration, because my favorite part whenever he does these promos is to see if he can crack, you know, Orange Cassidy or Kyle O'Reilly. And he almost did it last night, because at the end of Mark Briscoe's promo, he just randomly starts just yelling gibberish, and you see Kyle's face where he's like, I don't know how to react. I don't know what to do here. So
Now the true test will be, can he get Ishii to crack?
Ooh, I think he can. He even said, I'm gonna start calling you Big Tom now, and Tomohiro Ishii just looked at him stone face from the Stone Pitbull, gave no reaction. whatsoever. You know what's funny? Speaking of Ring of Honor and Double, obviously next week is going to be busy because they're going to have Death Before Dishonor and Rampage, as well as Collision and Battle of the Belts. But there's one upcoming week, I forgot which week it was, where they're going to be airing Collision and Rampage back to back because they're both going to be on a Friday or Saturday. I forgot what the case is.
Calampage.
But the interesting part about that is Collision is going to be in Arlington while Rampage is being filmed wherever. It's going to be a taped episode of Rampage wherever that Dynamite was.
Oh, really?
So we're going to get a taped episode of Rampage following or going before a live edition of Collision. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
Them together.
They might switch things around, but from what I was seeing, the schedule was a little weird like that. So it should be interesting how they're going to talk about that. We go to our next match. It is the Lumberjack match between Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo. I tried to get everybody's name on the outside. We have Lady Frost, Rachel Ellering, Taya Valkyrie, Marina Shafir, Layla Hirsch, Red Velvet, Abaddon, Robin Renegade, Diamante, Billy Starks, no Athena. So Athena can't even get...
No Athena, no Aminata.
Like, yeah, there was no Queen Aminata. Yeah, you're right. Interesting.
Yeah. I remember at one point I thought I saw her and I'm like, nope, that's not her.
I guess it makes sense. They don't want to cross heads against going into their match, I guess.
Have Billy in Velvet.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder what the decision for that was. I know they're trying to play the storyline of Athena faking her injury, so maybe they didn't want her out there on crutches or whatever the case is. But there was also a bunch of like random like enhancement talent that I'm guessing is going to be part of the Ring of Honor tapings. Yeah, a lot of these faces I didn't recognize.
Yeah, there were three for sure who I didn't recognize. And thank you so much. I believe it was Andrew who commented on Twitter that one of them did look exactly like Kylie Rae because I jumped.
Oh my God, so did I. I saw
the one in the blue and white.
Yes, I saw like her ponytail and I'm like, what is Kylie Rae doing there? And when she turned around, I'm like, okay, it's not her. I thought the same exact thing. I'm like, that's an interesting appearance right there. But we go back to the match here. The first pinfall attempt happens right away when Rosa hits a crossbody before Deonna comes right back with a draping DDT off of the ropes. They go back and forth on the outside as Rachel Ellering takes out Deonna while Taya is holding on to Rosa's leg on the other end. They go to the top rope where Deonna suplexes Rosa onto all the Lumberjills on the outside as we go to picture-in-picture. When we come back, Rosa is sent to the outside where she fights off the Lumberjacks. Back inside, Rosa hits the running dropkick to Deonna in the ropes, followed by an airplane spin into a Death Valley driver for a two count. Deonna turns a roll-up attempt into a cross arm breaker, but Rosa is able to escape. A bit of back and forth before Deonna is trying to put the armbar on, but Rosa is able to get the ropes again. They go back and forth on the apron with strikes until Rosa hits this crazy-looking spear through the ropes to Deonna, landing on all the Lumberjacks on the outside. Crazy visual here. Deserved a replay, and we obviously got it here. We see Taya taking out Ellering with a Larry on the outside, and I'm like, why did she randomly take her out? But we'll find out why, because this causes a total confusion and commotion as everybody starts brawling, and during all this confusion, Taya hands Deonna the metal part of the turnbuckle, which she uses on Rosa to get the pin and the win at 11 minutes and 12 seconds. And Taya and Deonna walk off together, possibly starting some sort of relationship between these two. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not a little bit of a wonky finish, but it's a Lumberjack match where there really shouldn't be any rules anyway. But it is an interesting wrinkle here, having Taya being the one to help Deonna get the win.
Yeah, like it was very specifically her. And as you said, they paired them up afterwards. So it made me think that there is going to be a face-off in the near future of Taya and Deonna versus Rosa and we shall see. Like Rosa, I feel like she's not someone who has friends that fast. Strangely enough, the last time she had someone to pair up with her, it was Deonna, and you see where that went. I'm a little done with this feud. Like I find that it's just been a sequence of matches, but there hasn't been a really solid build between them. And I say this as someone, I'm not going to argue because I like having both women on TV and I like having a program that doesn't have to do with a belt. So it's not a huge complaint, but they keep doing, I guess the story at this point is that Deonna keeps finding a way to win, even though it's usually very underhanded. And obviously it's like it's getting more underhanded every time, meaning perhaps that she has to rely more and more on cheating to beat Rosa. But yeah, we'll see where this goes. But immediately I'm thinking, okay, tag match Deonna and Taya versus Rosa and someone, and then it begs the question who the someone is.
I don't know how soon she is to return, or she even wants to return just yet. But Ty Conti is the first thing that pops in my head. I feel like she'd be the perfect person to team up with Rosa. But again, I'm not sure exactly what her situation is or when she's returning, as well as Sammy. I mean, I don't know what's going on with Sammy Guevara. Last I heard, he was like about ready to come back, but there wasn't any updates after that, I guess. So we go to the main event for the vacant AEW Trio Championships. So I noticed this right away. No, there's only three belts there. There's not nine titles. There's no more Ring of Honor Trios titles. I'm not sure what's going on with that.
They have consolidated, yeah.
But this match is just for the AEW Trios Championships as the Patriarchy takes on the Guns and Juice Robinson of the Bang Bang Gang. Nick Wayne and Austin Gunn start the match going back and forth, running the ropes until Austin sends Wayne into the corner where Christian Cage tacks himself in. The fans chant for Juice Robinson as he comes in as well, but before they can go at it, Christian just tags himself out to Killswitch. Juice counters Killswitch by biting his hand as the crowd starts to chant for Luchasaurus. Christian has a little assist as Killswitch takes control, going into picture-in-picture. When we return, Colton Gunn gets the hot tag and goes after all the Patriarchy, hitting a neckbreaker on Wayne for a two. Austin comes in and gets tossed to the outside by Wayne. Christian and Killswitch tag in and out, and they keep working on Austin here, but Austin is able to fight his way out and make the hot tag to Juice. Juice dodges a Wayne's World attempt and jabs away at Wayne. They all start fighting on the outside as Killswitch gets sent into the crowd here. Back inside, Juice stays on top of Wayne, hitting a cannonball followed by this crazy-looking jackhammer, but Christian runs in just in time to break at the pin. The Bang Bang Gang, they start to surround Christian here as the Guns double clothesline him to the outside. Juice stops a low blow attempt from Wayne and hits a powerbomb, getting a two count. Killswitch runs in and chokeslams Juice off the top rope as Wayne hits a top rope moonsault to the Guns on the outside. Christian hits a frog splash on Juice. I thought the match was over here, but he is able to kick out at two. As Christian was trying to get Killswitch to attack Juice, he misses, and he hits Christian by accident here. So a little bit of they're keeping the story going with Killswitch and Christian not being on the same page here. All six men, they start fighting inside and outside of the ring. And then we get another wonky finish here. I'm not sure what happened here, but like the referee, I guess, got pulled in by Christian, but I didn't see that part. All I saw was Bryce Remsburg going in between Christian's legs.
Grabbing onto Christian's legs. And I didn't know what had happened there. Yeah, I think it was a case of the camera not maybe capturing what it was supposed to, because I didn't see how we got into this position. It's just like, why is Bryce intervening on behalf of the Bang Bang Gang? Which is what it looked like. But I thought maybe because they were tangled up in the ropes, he was trying to separate them and the camera missed him giving them a count. So he had just started to pull them apart. But yeah, it was clearly to get to the shenanigan. And yeah, could have done with, with these groups, you knew it was going to happen. It was just, it started to feel like there was a lot tonight. I really liked the match, though. I thought it was very entertaining. I thought, you're continuing to the sort of hint. I say that like it's subtle. They're continuing to tease that there is going to be a split between Killswitch and the rest of the Patriarchy. We'll see what happens. I think that you kind of knew the way that this one was going to go because, of course, there's already a next program teed up, which I guess we'll get to following the end. Go ahead.
So the shenanigan was Shayna Wayne spraying something into Juice's eyes, and Christian follows with the Killswitch to get the pin and the win at 13 minutes and 17 seconds to become AEW Trios Champions for the first time. And like you said, something happened after, because as they're celebrating, the lights start to just flicker just a little bit. And I thought somebody was going to come out, but nobody came out. But obviously, it's hinting to a one house of black. So,
yeah. But that is the story. They took out Buddy Murphy, and I'm guessing that that's your program. In which case, I actually expect the titles to change hands at All In if it's them versus House of Black. And I think that might be where you get the split with Killswitch. Like maybe something happens and he walks out and leaves them. Like, I don't think that this needs to be a long reign, but yeah, clearly it's the destination here is to get to the Patriarchy versus House of Black and then reset. You can have the Bang Bang Gang still participate in the Trios division by, say, having a Trios division where different Trios fight and it's not entirely about the belts.
Yes, I'm not sure if just the Ring of Honor titles are just gone now or if they're going to go ahead and crown, for all that we know, they're going to crown new Ring of Honor six-man champions next week at Death Before Dishonor, probably. We're going to be like, oh, okay. But it kind of makes sense because there is a lot of trios in Ring of Honor, you know, that could hold those titles. So I'm okay with that.
There are more than... Yeah, like the thing is, if you a lot of statements about Ring of Honor would start with, if you book Ring of Honor properly, they actually have pretty strong trios and tag divisions that they can work with. And so now that you have this little rest period where you can bring in people every week and it's the same space and it's a less frenetic than having everything on the road, it's a good opportunity to evaluate what you're doing with this show, because they have this, they've run on this very strong pay-per-views, very like occasional good matches on week-to-week TV, but nothing huge. They have been riding the back of this Athena title run forever. And at some point, I would even say that like that has lost steam at this point, partly because of Athena's injury, which has kept her from participating fully in the last couple of months of programming. It is time to rethink what you do in there, Anthony, and it's time to hand this off to someone who can run it as their own thing, so that, you know, it's too much for one guy to be doing. You have three television shows worth of programming and a very deep roster. Let someone else play. Let them handle Ring of Honor. Let's see what someone else can do.
And really quick, while we're on Ring of Honor, so far the lineup for Death Before Dishonor next Friday is Mark Briscoe defending the world title against Roderick Strong, Athena defending the women's world title against Queen Aminata, Billy Starks defending the world women's television title against Red Velvet, and just signed today, a Texas death match between Diamante and Layla Hirsch. And they just had a great match on this past episode of Ring of Honor, having a lights out match. I definitely recommend everybody to check that out. So when they announce a rematch is happening next week, I was totally for it. I think it's the right match to redo.
Yeah, three women's matches on the pay-per-view. Look, Ring of Honor, as I said, has been their lifeblood, has been their women's division. You actually saw pretty much, it was the Ring of Honor women's division that was standing as the Lumberjacks.
Yep.
I'm sure they'll throw a couple on. It's probably being taped right now that they're adding a few things. The funny thing to me is that what's become very exciting the last couple of shows is the Zero Hour for Ring of Honor, because they always do something crazy. They always do something completely unexpected and inconsequential, but really fun. And so there's part of me that's thinking, I just want to see what's going to be on the pre-show for Death Before Dishonor. Probably, I would say, although I'm sure the wrestling will be very good, this is probably the least excited I've been for Ring of Honor pay-per-view, because in a while, just because of how the Athena program has flagged. And I do hope that we do know that she's sort of ready to go back in the ring. She had a match with Maja Slamovich a couple of weeks ago and whacked her in the head with the boot to get the win. So, I'll be curious to see what happens. I'll be very curious to see how the crowd reacts, because this is in Athena's backyard.
Yep.
And although she has been very much playing the heel, even now people have reacted better to her against Aminata, who's very much the babyface. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens with the reactions from the audience next week.
And I can see a couple either returns or surprises. Obviously, we're going to get the debut of MXM, the Mansoor and Mace Madden. So I can see them possibly challenging for the tag titles. And I mentioned this to you off the air, but I can definitely see, like, this is the time to bring in a Camille. She's obviously been, waiting forever, and I can see her being brought in as either some sort of muscle to help Athena, or maybe even to face off against Athena after the match. I can see them having some sort of a face-off.
Who do you think faces Atlantis?
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So they did tease the Kyle Fletcher rematch, right?
That hasn't the rematch. Yet, so I don't think that's been announced, so that's a possibility. But yeah, this is going to be... I kind of hope they don't just hand the belt back to Fletcher, because it would just be too easy. But I'm curious, like, this will be sort of his pay-per-view debut. He's had one title defense on sort of Ring of Honor. It's not even TV. Like, you're saying TV on weekly Ring of Honor. But I want to see what they do with him. And I do hope that they let him continue to hold the belt. Although I can also see, like, there's an argument to put it back on Fletcher.
But as far as the debut episode of Collision in this new esports stadium, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the whole look, the whole presentation of it. Obviously, fixed a couple of the sound issues here or there, but I like how the crowd looked. I like how the crowd was filmed. The lighting, everything, I think, was perfectly fine with this. I want to know where the commentary team was. Maybe we'll find that out. It's like this running mystery for the next six weeks or so. Where is the commentary team? And maybe we'll find out. But I'm okay with it. I mean, the matches aside with some of the wonky finishes, but the actual presentation, I think, was really good. And it's refreshing. Like I said, exactly what I wanted from Collision when it first launched.
Exactly. And I think that, again, it goes to marketing yourself. If I am in Arlington and I have the opportunity to go to more than one show, did this make me feel like I'm going to get to see some cool stuff if I go to a show? Yep, it did. And I thought that it was a good way to introduce feature, again, feature a lot of lucha talent, have a new debut, a couple like FTR was not an expected appearance. And so, yeah, I think that it was a nice blend of new stuff and old stuff. And I'm curious to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, and if anybody listening to this is actually at the show and listens to this after the fact, please call in or leave feedback next week. I just want to know how this whole live experience is being in this smaller but more intimate arena. But that's what we thought of the show. We're going to start going to your feedback and your callers, and we're going to start with the first call of the day, a regular here on Collision Course, Hanzi. What's up, Hanzi?
What's going on? I was just watching TNA in the background, man.
Yeah, I just saw the main event finish up. No spoilers. I'm not going to spoil anything, but the show is over. So I did see the finish for that.
Well, I will say the Quebecers did reunite. I'm joking. When somebody came to help out PCO, I thought they were going to have Jacques Rougeau show up, but it was just Rhino. You know what I mean? But I thought that would have been crazy if PCO. And I did again. Are we not talking about it or no?
I mean, we didn't watch the show, so there's not much that we can really say about it. It was kind of in the background, but I can't really go into details. But if anything you want to bring up, sure.
I think feel free to talk about it. If anyone does want to watch the show and has not watched it yet, please, like, brace yourself for spoilers for now on. But Hanzi, go right ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's a couple of things that I did like about it that I thought they were going to do a screw job, but they teased it with, Ali. And they brought up Earl Hebner and all that kind of stuff, but it kind of backfired. But I'll say it was a good night for the baby faces. And with the call, it was shocking because Josh Alexander, he turned heel in the middle of the main event. So, So hold on. I'm busy right now. Hold on 1 second. Yes. Jesus Christ. Sorry. This is the consequences of living at home. You know, I mean, sorry about that.
I thought that was Josh Alexander about to like turn heel on you.
Josh Alexander coming after Hanzi is the ultimate heel move here.
Definitely check out the show. What to call it? It was pretty good. As far as Collision goes, I thought I had on the background. I thought that was I actually liked the environment that they were in. I thought it was a good setup. I don't know if that's going to be a permanent thing where they have this kind of setup for it, but I kind of like the distinguishing the differences between Dynamite and that. So if that's like the beginning of them kind of like having a different feel for it, I didn't mind it. I guess what they called I missed the Sheeta and Sky match, so I
it was very very easy to miss. It was a minute.
It was quick.
Well, so when I came back and I saw that Nice and Phoenix were getting extra time, it was surprising. But like as a person that likes I like Tony Nice, like I like his presentation in AEW. I think his character has been really good in AEW, even though he's just kind of like not a job guy, but like a guy that jobs to the stars, basically, right? So yeah. I always kind of enjoy seeing Nice do. I always enjoyed seeing Nice get some time, whatever. But I thought like that was a good match, and I really thought that maybe they should have saved given it more time for the trios match for next week or something like that. And I thought they should have just let the main event be Thunder Rosa and Deonna, which I thought was a really good match. I guess like a lot of the women, I don't blame a lot of the women because I thought it was so chaotic in that match, right? I don't blame them because they probably don't get as much TV time as everyone else. So it's like, make your minutes count. So I like that everybody was just kind of going, all out of control in that match, whatever. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it was like the greatest lumberjack match ever or anything like that, but I've been enjoying the feud. I just don't know where, like, it always feels like in this company, if you don't have a title with the women, then like sometimes like you don't really have much feud going on sometimes. So I don't know where Deonna and Taya will go from this. You know what I mean? Where like, you know, because I mean, cause they'll go feud to feud, but I don't know what will be elevated. Because right now it just seems like the TBS title is going to be on Mercedes for a while, and the women's championship is going to be in a whole other thing with Tony and Mariah. So I don't know where you elevate, you know, Deonna to, basically, but I'm glad that she's picking up wins. I think, you know, she just, you know, after, you know, maybe All In or something like that, she should be someone that gets way more focused. Cause I, you know, cause I seen her TNA run. I know she's capable of being a main event person. You know what I mean? So I hope there, you know, she actually gets more elevated, but I've been enjoying the feud. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree. I think that clearly there is interest on the part of Tony Khan or whoever. Like, I think we tend to just ascribe whatever happens to him, but there is clearly interest from whoever is in charge there collectively in keeping Deonna and Rosa in a high profile role. I think that's why, like, that's why they keep trying to bring this feud back and keep it going, so that they are always visible, so that they're always in the conversation among the top women. What they have to do better is find a way to keep women in that conversation without necessarily, like you said, tying it to a belt. There are different ways to get women involved in the programming. They just have to play around with that a little more.
Yeah, and then another thing I'll talk about, I was kind of struggling because I totally forgot, but then I remembered it. You got to talk about I know there's been criticism of the Acclaim being used. I understand that the thing is, like, I understand FTR, like, being the more prominent team. And I just feel like sometimes, like, as good as their, like, you know, their matches are, and they'll have good promos and, you know, maybe like a feud here or there, they seem, and maybe because of the personal issues going on, they keep going in a direction where, like, they'll have a feud, they'll leave for a bit, and they see that their feuds are scattered, right? The reason why I'm not against Acclaim being in this role, because I feel like out of all the tag teams in, like, the, like, 5 years the AEW has been around, I feel like the two teams that have actually elevated into, like, you know, the next level, at least, are the Guns and the Acclaimed. And I always kind of tie those two together, right? So I feel like the Acclaimed kind of do deserve the spot, even though I feel like the last several months, it hasn't been, like, they haven't done as, like, as characters. They haven't been as, important as, like, the previous year that they're getting over and all that. So I feel like this match should help change the perception about them, because I feel like Bowens and Caster, like, you know, are I think a home one of Tony Khan's greatest creations of a homegrown team that they've elevated up. So and I really do think that eventually, like, with Caster kind of being, like, you know, more hated online, and, you know, leaning into it, I think eventually you're gonna have a split with Bowens and Max Caster. I do think Bowens should be someone that should be elevated into going for a singles title eventually, whether it be the International, the TNT, or the, you know, or the Continental Classic, whatever. Because I do think Bowens, and that's not to say that I don't want a Jannetty Caster in there, that whatever, right? I think Caster could actually be a great heel as well, whatever, right? But in my personal opinion, I do think that they'll bring whatever needs to be brought in the Blood and Guts match. I don't think they're going to be like this team that doesn't fit into there. I think they're going to actually do really, really well in there. I hope so, at least. But I mean, we'll see. But as far as I do see that Acclaim will face Bucks at All In. And I do think, I don't know what you do with FDR. Maybe you have a multi-man match to figure out who gets the winner at All. Because, again, we have to keep remembering that All Out is like a week later also, right? So, or 2 weeks later, or something like that.
I think it's 10 days. I think they get two episodes of Dynamite in between now instead of one.
Yeah. So what's it called? So I do see that, like, I'm not gonna say leave FTR off the pay per view or anything like that, but I do think that I guess sometimes I just don't want them to overdo the Bucks FTR. Like, I understand they have a great rivalry, but, like, it's always been more about the rivalry, and they never really have a super great storyline as far as, like, going in. That's like Austin and Rock is like they never really had, like, the best feud in a storyline sense, but their whole thing was more of a rivalry that they, you know, build up off their matches that they've had together, right? And that's how I feel with FTR and Bucks. Like, they never had, like, the greatest story. It's always, like, surrounded by real-life discourse more so than the actual storyline. So I do think that, what to call, like, I am getting Bucks and FTR fatigue, but I understand that they are a priority team, so I'm not gonna, like, you know, poo-poo on that. But I just I don't think it needs to be a rematch at All In with the Bucks and FTR. Even though I could see them doing that, but I think Acclaim should be the ones to actually face Bucks at All In, if that makes sense. And what else I gotta say? Let me understand, the Trios Championships, they've had three sets of titles, okay? So it's ROH, the Acclaim title, and then what was the third title? I have no idea. What
the regular titles. The regular AEW titles.
Yeah, the AEW AEW titles and the Scissor titles are the same. They're just different physical titles, and then you have the ROH titles.
Because the thing is, Excalibur mentioned at the pay-per-view, the last pay-per-view, when they defended the titles, right, that the unified titles have a new lineage than the actual original thing. But then I look at Wikipedia or the cagematch.net, which is another controversial topic this week. I look at that, and it's still the same lineage as the AEW title. So, and on the pay-per-view, Excalibur mentioned that the unified title was going to be a new lineage. So I didn't know if they're continuing that, but I'm actually, I thought Christian, the patriarchy, they could have feuded with the House of Black without the titles. And I thought this was a wave to get Juice. I thought the original plan was always to have Juice and Guns be the Trios team, but then they just settled for Jay White in the time being. They did all this convoluted stuff that didn't need to be done for to get there. But I guess Christian can run with it, I guess, but I would have opted for the Bang Bang Gang to keep. And I really have enjoyed it. And I'm curious of what they'll do for the next coming pay-per-views, because I want to see what they can do as, like, you know, cool edgy baby face as opposed to the heel. I actually like that they're going the baby face route in that regard. You know what I mean? But I overall thought the show was actually pretty decent, all things considered. I thought the wrestling was really, really lengthy and really good. I don't know what else really advanced, but I thought, you know, it was a cool atmosphere over there. You know what I mean? So I'll just leave you guys with that, man. I've been babbling on for a while and all that kind of stuff.
It's fine.
We love hearing you babble, Hansi.
It's still early in the night. And thank you for bringing up that whole lineage thing that Excalibur mentioned, because I'll probably be the one that has to update that. So now that you mentioned it, I have to go back and see exactly what's happening, because I'll probably go in and make it a new lineage.
The last pay-per-view, watch the Trios match, and Excalibur mentions it. So if you want to go, again, don't take my word for it, though, but I'm just saying Excalibur was the one that said it. So, because I try to keep track of the lineage and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, you guys have been doing good job for the past 2 hours, whatever. So I appreciate you guys for letting me on. And sorry for the Impact spoilers, by the way. So you know what I mean? Yeah.
But perfectly fine.
Definitely check it out, though. It was a good show.
Peace out. Will do. Thank you, Hansi. We'll hear from you soon. And we will go to our next call. Sorry, I see the preview of him before I add him. Mughead. What's going on, Mughead?
Bricks eating the house. Bung, bung.
I see. Are you representing New Jersey today with the Bricks? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I just wanted to switch it up today.
Gotcha. What's on your mind, Mughead?
Well, I mean, normally I would like, you know, riff on Collision and what I liked about it and didn't like about it, but this is not tonight was not that night.
You didn't watch it all? I'm guessing
something else was on.
Yeah. Gotcha. Without spoiling too much, was there anything, any matches that stood out to you that you would recommend?
Mustafa Speedball fucking rocked it.
Good.
I was saying that was the one that maybe, like, for various reasons I decided not to go. But that was the one that I kind of, I'd like to see that.
Man, I mean, without letting too many cats out of the bag, I mean, as much as I want to, I mean, that match rocked it. And I will give one thing away, just one. It's not nothing to do with the result.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mustafa wearing Bret Hart colors in Montreal. I mean, really? That is such a heel.
I noticed a lot of like gear from the. I was able to catch some stuff in the background, but I saw like the Rascals had like Buzz Lightyear inspired gear. ABC I think had like Heart Foundation gear, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So a lot of nice little tributes throughout the night.
And Josh Alexander wore the pink and black as well.
So I mean, Hanzi had mentioned like a heel turn from Josh Alexander in the match, which is pretty on par to what I was thinking was going to happen with maybe him reforming with Ethan Page. So I guess that makes sense if Alexander is turning heel, or I guess leaning that way, if they're going to maybe reform the North down the line.
Yeah, potentially. But I mean, at this point, I mean, did Hanzi tell you who won?
I don't know who won the last two matches, so I'd rather not.
All right, say less.
I saw who won the world title.
Okay.
Yeah. Say like. Okay. As much as I love to like, you know, as much as I like to like, you know, wax poetic on and what I liked about the Bus Anniversary, I gotta hold off until you catch up, so, you know. I mean,
John Pollock will have the show tomorrow in the cafe.
Yes.
So I'm sure he'll have a feedback thread if you guys wanna leave your thoughts there, Muggin. I'm sure he'll love to read them tomorrow.
Of course. Is he recording it tonight?
I don't know. I'm guessing tonight. Yeah.
I thought he said he's recording it, but yeah, it'll be up tomorrow morning.
Okay. Sky Blue is. I heard about Sky Blue. I mean, but now I can talk about Collision. I'm a little bit afraid for Sky Blue. She got hurt.
Yeah, I'm trying to get like an update. Unfortunately, there is no update just yet. But yeah, hopefully everything is okay with her. I know somebody in the chat asked what happened to her. So basically, to reiterate, there was a crossbody spot from Sheeta on the apron, and it looked like she went a little bit too low. Hitting her knee ankle region, and I guess Tony Khan said that she suffered an ankle injury because of that. So hopefully everything is okay, and we'll get an update.
They had to stop the match immediately, and Sky required assistance to get out. So
yeah,
it was just bad luck. I mean, it's just bad luck, and I love that she's not you know, corrupted by the mist anymore. Thank God for small miracles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because Julia Hart is, you know, on the shelf. And I heard that there's new trios champions now.
There is the patriarchy.
Oh boy! I was kind of hoping that, you know, Bang Bang Gang would get those titles back, considering the fact that they were not allowed to freebird them. I mean, that whole thing was so mind numbing in retrospect, because nobody batted an eye when MJF had to have Samoa Joe fill in for him when he was Ring of Honor tag champion. It's just, you know, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, they could have easily just had the match just for the titles and had the patriarchy win it, but for whatever reason, they wanted to do it this way. But
even, I think it's even weirder if you weren't going to have the bank. Like if you were going to have the patriarchy win, just make it a title challenge. So yeah, it was more convoluted than it needed to be.
Honestly, I think the main reason why they did this is just so they can go back to one set of titles. So they have a reasoning to like present the new titles to the winners. So I guess maybe that was their way to kind of like forget the other titles while moving on to the one lineage here, but who knows?
Okay. And I heard tonight there's a West Coast Pro. There's a three branded show right now going on between Deadlock, West Coast Pro, and Prestige.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's free on YouTube.
Killer looking lineup. I can't remember now, but I definitely, I saw the ad for it and it looked really good.
And, you know, Alex Shelley cut a promo after his match, hinting that he might not come back, fueling speculation of where him and Sabre are going to end up next.
I swear, MCMG, Motor City Machine Guns, has been trending on Twitter for like the last 2 weeks, I feel. Like whenever I go on there, they're always trending number one. So good thing they're being talked about. So yeah, I hope they end up somewhere. I don't care where they end up. I just want to see them.
I think again, when people are dropping indie titles, then to me, it's a definite sign it's WWE. True. Always, because if they work with anyone else, they can continue to work with indie promotions. WWE, you're sort of on an exclusive, or I guess now with some of their partners, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really a bad thing. I mean, hell, look at Bloodsport. I mean, Bloodsport, you know, has become a melting pot for promotions. I mean, look at this one. Look at this upcoming one in Brooklyn. They got talent from TNA and AEW, WWE as well, and you know the Creeds are going to be in big matches on next week. You know, Brutus Creed is facing Tom Lawler. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and Julius Creed is facing Royce Isaac, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that's Dempsey.
So Royce Isaac or Matt Mikowski?
Matt Mikowski.
Matt Mikowski. Charlie Dempsey is facing Royce Isaac. Okay, there we go. Gotcha.
And Shayna Baszler and Miyu Yamashita. That'll be dope.
Yeah, I'll be there. I got my ticket. So as soon as I heard about it, I get in Brooklyn, I'll make sure to go there. So I'm doing that and House of Glory two nights prior. So it should be a really exciting weekend next weekend. So.
And also about Slammiversary. Ashma Elegance probably had her best performance to date against Jordynne Grace. I mean, I gotta say, she was on her game. I can't lie to you. And speaking of the Juggernaut, you should check out her and Chokihiro Hashimoto from Sendai Girls. That was a great match.
Nice. I'll be able to check. Okay, where can I watch Sendai Girls? I'm not too familiar with the promotion.
I found
it. You said online. Gotcha.
Hey, look. Okay, it's not really piracy. Is that really piracy if you find it?
Okay, I was just more curious on what streaming service they're even on. So
they're on Wrestle Universe. They're on Wrestle Universe with DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, Madrigal Gold. You know, they're there, and it was a great match. It was a great match, and and what else? I got a kick out of seeing Rascals rock the Buzz Lightyear gear. Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah, Slammiversary was, you know, Slammiversary was a very good, Slammiversary was a good show, and you know, Montreal was especially hot for the last matches.
I was going to ask you, was a crowd, because the little that I saw, the crowd was really amped up. They kept it up the entire show. That's good to hear. Okay,
especially during like the last couple matches, especially during the last two title matches, nice. They were especially hot. They were especially hot for Steve Mustafa.
Yeah, I was going to say, whenever you put a local in front of a Montreal crowd, it's like instant fire. The only time I think I have ever heard Eddie Kingston get booed was here when they put him just in a quick match against Evil Uno. Montreal crowds are insane in terms of loyalty. Like, you're always going to get a hometown pop for someone, but here it's extreme.
You brought up Evil Uno. We're talking about injuries and ending matches early on Ring of Honor. He was facing off against Shibata, and I don't know what happened, but the match just like ended kind of prematurely as well. Hopefully he's okay. I'm not sure what happened with Evil Uno, but that was a weird ending to that match.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was abrupt for sure.
Oh, yes, of course. What was I going to say? Yeah. They're going to be taping the next couple of tapings in Montreal. And it's kind of strange because, like, they taped a bunch of stuff in Philadelphia, because typically they would film four episodes for 2 days, and one of those tapings happened, and they already had like a list of matches that happened in Philadelphia. Because I think maybe they're going to be like, you know, I think they're going to air them as a vault. I think they're going to put them in the vault or something.
Sometimes they show like kind of like airings like out of, you know, tapings out of airings or whatever the case is, so I'm sure they'll find a workaround to that.
It's tricky because, of course, when you have the pay-per-view, if you've got shows airing afterwards, you have to hide the pay-per-view champions. Results.
True. It might be tricky, right?
Yeah, that makes sense because they don't want to give away what happens at, you know, the pay-per-view. Exactly. Because, you know, and what else? Yeah.
Hey, no problem at all.
Okay. I'm getting my train of thought back. Okay. Have you checked out Gambino's new album?
Whose new album?
Gambino.
No, I have not. So it's a movie that he's doing, but he did like an album for the movie. Is that correct? I see a new movie that he has coming out, and the album is called the same title as the movie. So I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong about that, but.
I was watching Hot Ones. I was watching his episode of Hot Ones. I mean, it's a new album. I'm going to check that out soon.
Gotcha. I checked out Common and P-Rock finally. I listened to that. That was a really, really good album. Really soulful. I enjoyed that one a lot.
Noted. I'm gonna add that to my poll once I check out Pearl's first album.
Yeah. And I did see that West Side Gun was the theme song for Slammiversary tonight. So good for him to get some TV time with his song.
Yeah.
Poor guy's been on every single wrestling show trying to get involved somehow one way or another. So it's a good thing that TNA used his theme song at least.
Griselda's influence is spreading, and there's this one album I want to check out from Poe. You know, she's known for the song Angry Johnny. I'm sure Kate, you know who that song is.
It's just it's a P-O-E.
P-O-E.
P-O-E. Okay. different.
Yeah, and what's crazy is that, you know, Jay Dilla, like, you know, contributed to that album.
Oh wow,
it's nuts. Nice. I had to look it up. It was he had a credit on a song called Fingertips, and then I had to look up the original. I had to look up the original beat on YouTube, and the drums in his original version were excellent.
Awesome. Well, me and B will be recording a new episode of What Up Though probably next week. So if you want to leave some feedback from some more music recommendations, we'll definitely discuss that. Yeah. Same thing with Hanzi. I know Hanzi was asking for my thoughts on the Boys finale. We'll make sure to talk about that as well. I've seen a lot of movies the last couple of weeks, and I'm trying so hard to avoid Deadpool and Wolverine spoilers because I'm sure they're out there. And I'm just like unsubscribing to different YouTube channels and whatnot because they're just putting everything up. And I'm just like, just stop. I don't want to hear anything about this movie anymore.
Well, you're not gonna get anything from me because I mean, I am someone in the weeds. I am someone in the weeds somewhat because I mean, I'm not looking for spoilers myself. But I mean, I subscribe to a Patreon that like drops like exclusive, you know, film and TV stuff and like gotcha. Film TV news. And I try my best to keep quiet because I don't want to like, you know, get banned.
Gotcha. I'll make sure to block you if you say anything, Muggin. Don't worry.
Hey, listen. Okay, I know how to keep my mouth shut. Okay, believe me, man. All right, thank you guys.
All right, Muggin, take care. Hear from you soon. And we go to the forum where we do have a piece of feedback from Andrew from Capra, and as always, who says, "So I did like how Collision looked tonight in a new venue, even with a smaller crowd. They were still pretty hyped up. The show was good. I was looking forward to the Sky Blue Hikaru Shida match. As much as Lady Frost is a fine talent, I know she will lose every time she's out there. So I liked how they had a match where you didn't know the outcome automatically. Hopefully Sky isn't hurt too badly. I also liked how they tried to establish some of the Lumberjacks and give them FaceTime. Except, of course, Kylie Rae's doppelganger. You never got to see her face. I'm hoping the crew we had on today is a crew going forward. Lastly, I understand scripted promos can be helpful for some, but I loved hearing Kevin Von Erich talk like he wasn't even on television. He wasn't trying to block properly or face the camera. He was just a dad talking about his kids and of old times. I kind of want him to have a retirement match, as I think he deserves one last big night dedicated to him. Dustin Rhodes and Kevin Von Erich are just dads being dudes. Yeah, I did notice that as well. It was just like him not even cutting the promo, just him just talking and just happened to have a camera filming him. So
it was covered because it's like you sometimes lose the perspective that this is artificial. But yeah, I like the way they did it because he seemed to just be talking off the hip. So whoever was operating the camera pivoted so that it was just like they kind of closed in on him a bit. So it's like a little more intimate. So they're just giving this impression of a guy sharing his honest thoughts. And if they're gonna do something like a Von Erich's tribute of some kind, like this is the time to do it. This is the place to do it where they are now. I'm not opposed to that at all.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's what we thought of our show. We'll be again here next week. Next week, like Kate said in the beginning, it's going to be a later start than usual as we'll be covering Collision plus Battle of the Belts. So we'll be on around 11-ish whenever that show ends. And a reminder for anybody that wants to hear about TNA Slammiversary, John Pollock will have a show on the Post Wrestling Cafe tomorrow morning, as well as the first of our many, many G1 shows with Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson being up to bat first, talking about Nights 1 and Nights 2 of G1. And you'll start your coverage for G1 next weekend as well?
I'm on a bunch of times. The first one will be next Sunday. I will be hosting with Karen Peterson. We'll be again talking about two nights worth of shows. More on that. Keep it tuned to Post. Keep it tuned. That's so quaint and old fashioned. Just keep an eye on Post. We will be sharing our updates regularly and looking what each show will be covering.
The hardest working team. I haven't said this in a while, but Post Wrestling, we're the best podcast, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but, we're the best cast.
Shout out to everybody, all the hard work. Andrew Thompson, Jack went on doing their coverage on the website, as well as all the podcasts from all the different voices here on Polish Wrestling. But that's it for me. Kate, thank you, as always. And thank you for everybody for listening to us in this free, random, rare, free episode of Collision Course. Don't get used to it. You know, we're more used to being behind the
paywall. We're normally expensive.
Exactly. So we don't do this often. But thank you for everybody who joined us and maybe got a teaser of us. And if you're interested, check us out every week on Saturdays on the Post Wrestling Cafe for Collision Course. And we'll be here next week for another episode. Have a good night.